Hello, we are live for the 12th episode of Neuro Women Natter, which I'm quite proud to say that this is the 12th episode that we've done. My co-host Charlie is in the background somewhere, but she's taking a rest from talking because she wanted to hand this episode over to us. Purely because I have what we're talking about today is neurodivergence and PMDD. And I have lived experience with both neurodivergence and PMDD. And I wanted to invite our special guest, who is an expert in all things periods, is our very lovely Samantha, who is also known as the Period Princess. Welcome, Samantha.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very excited about today.
And to be honest, we got some really heavy responses on LinkedIn about this subject. It seemed to spark lots of conversation because I actually don't think this topic is talked about enough, and it's one of the reasons why I created the linking group that's called Women ADHD Autism PMDD, because it is a huge co-occurrence with neurodivergence, but also it has a huge effect on us differently from those who are neurotypical who also experience PMDD as well. So, I think it'd be interesting for us to just say what is PMDD, Samantha? So, from your expert opinion, what if you was to say it in simple terms for everybody to understand, what is PMDD?
So, it is not just bad PMS, I would say that. because people just tend to go, oh, it's just hormones. No, it's not. It's a really severe condition that is life disrupting with significant symptoms. And it's not just a hormonal condition, it's how our nervous system and our body responds to the fluctuations of hormones and being sensitive to them. So particularly in the luteal phase, in the second half of the cycle. If you are a neurotypical person, that's going to have, some pretty severe impacts. But if you're a neurodivergent person, that kind of is like tenfold. And we are three times more likely as neurodivergent women to and people with periods to experience PMDD because of that.
Yeah. What would you say if I was to ask you, what would you say the typical symptoms are of PMDD?
So we've got some physical symptoms. So again, they're specifically happening in the luteal phase. So that's about 2 weeks before your period, dependent, like on where your mid-cycle is. Psychological symptoms. The key ones are overwhelm, mood swings, emotional dysregulation, anxiety, intrusive thoughts, rage, and sometimes even, like very sadly, like suicidal ideation as well, which is why this just really needs to be talked about so much more. Physical symptoms can range from sleep disruption, bloating, joint pain, fatigue, like breast tenderness, but like again, tenfold, like PMS, but worse. So, as I said, it's not just hormones, it's an exaggerated response in our brain and nervous system that responds differently to the normal fluctuations we would experience in a cycle. And the red flag really is that you might feel like a completely different person for that time before your period. And that's the kind of like thing to look out for, is to map that significance of how that feels.
So one of the questions I get quite a lot, because I was diagnosed quite late. So I didn't get my diagnosis of PMDD until last year. And I've been suffering with this all my life. So why, how do you think PMDD is typically diagnosed, and where do the barriers exist when getting diagnosed?
So The key indicator, so from the people I work with, so I should also clarify, I'm a neurodivergent woman myself, autistic and ADHD, hence why I'm going to info dump the whole of this session because it is my special subject. But as a menstrual wellness educator, coach and speaker, I kind of sort of look at particularly at that intersection of like hormones and neurodivergent traits and kind of how they overlap. So that's where I come from. So I'm not like a medical, you know, a GP or clinician, as it were. So what I'm looking for in the people that I work with is, again, that becoming like a completely different person with very exaggerated emotional responses within the second half of the cycle. But a key indicator is a kind of returning to self within the first day or two of your period. And that's quite, that's often a very key indicator of PMDD, is that it can't, the symptoms ease with your period. Clinical diagnosis kind of like crosses over with what I look for. So again, charting. And what I'm a huge advocate for is cycle mapping. But in a clinical situation, they'll look to chart symptoms across like two cycles using a symptom tracker. And again, also looking for when those symptoms kind of disappear. But the biggest barrier to all of this is lack of being of it being taken seriously. The gender pain gap, you know, it's just put down to women's problems and we just kind of got to deal with stuff. Yeah. Lack of research, you know, and acknowledgement through the medical professionals. And it just being brushed off as stress or PMS, or there being misdiagnosis, which is heartbreaking because, like I said, there's about 800,000 women currently diagnosed or and people with periods diagnosed with PMDD currently in the UK, but that doesn't account for the hundreds that are undiagnosed, misdiagnosed, and you know, of them, like 34% are struggling with suicidal feelings. And so it's very difficult when there's like a lack of research, a lack of acknowledgement, a lack of conversation about it, not enough people being diagnosed and not enough people getting the support that they really need. So charting and mapping is really key, is how I would work with people. And I know it's how that the clinical diagnosis also goes.
Yeah. So prior to me having medication, because I'm medicated for my PMDD. I used to use a PMDD tracker, which is an app that used to ask me about symptoms and ask me about how I was feeling, et cetera, when I started, when I came across what PMDD was. And as a person who is neurodivergent and has PMDD, actually the revelation of understanding the why behind some of my reactions and my experience and the not being who I, you know, of it feels like you become a completely different person. It's who is this person? Who is this person reacting in this way? And it actually nearly broke my marriage.
Yeah.
Because of my reactions were inconsistent and they weren't valid. They weren't valid reactions to how, you know, my husband would ask me a question and I would bite or snap or become really irritated really quickly. You know, even as an ADHD autistic woman, that can happen anyway, but it was completely overexerted. I couldn't regulate that emotion. And after the emotion had happened, I couldn't name it. I couldn't say why I'd done it. And I think that's really important for people to understand. So before, because we're going to talk about personal experience, but I just want to ask you, do you find that PMDD can amplify challenges like executive functioning, sensory sensitivities, or emotional regulation?
Yeah, so our hormones impact everything, like neurotypical or neurodivergent, however you identify, our hormones impact everything about the way that we function in the world, and not just during our period, but there's like four other phases. if you're a neurodivergent person, your hormonal fluctuations are going to impact your neurodivergent traits. It will include like our executive functioning skills, our sensory sensitivities when they show up, and our emotional regulation. Now, there are so many, there is a broad spectrum of what is considered normal, let's just say that. And so, like the saying, you've met one neurodivergent person, you've met one neurodivergent person, that goes the same for menstrual cycles. It will impact very differently. And I think understanding, you know, outside of, you know, PMS or PMDD, we're also experiencing other things in the first half of the cycle that can be dysregulating as well. Understanding those kinds of traits where they show up. But across the board, the best thing that we can do for ourselves is to map that. And I call it trait mapping. So not just looking at the period, but looking at the whole cycle, and then to start to notice our traits, because then we'll start to know when they show up, when those like wobbly times are. But specifically with PMDD, that luteal phase, so the second half of your cycle, that feels like literal fire. Like I said, some people call it hell week. And that's going to come along with brain fog, overwhelm, and the anxiety and everything that goes along with that. So yeah, they definitely have a crossover.
Yeah, no, again, from my own personal experience, it's, you know, because I also suffer with PMS with it, I get really bad, painful periods. And having to deal with the pain, the mental drain, and then having to try and concentrate on what it is that I need to do for that day. You know, I still remember when I, you know, I worked in a large facility, and I was their leader, I was their line manager, and I had to go in that day. And I remember just crumpled up in pain in this office thinking, I can't do this. I cannot do this. And I couldn't be the line manager I wanted to be, because I'm actually quite an empathetic line manager. So anyone could come and talk to me. My door was always open. And I'm that specific week, it was, don't talk to me. And I become this person of, I can't cope with your issue today because I can't even cope with mine. And I do think it needs more of a consideration of the openness of being people to be able to say, actually, I need to be communicated differently within this, this week. You know, I need to have time to actually reflect on what you're asking me, or I need some time for maybe, you know, whatever it is, to process information, or, you know, communicate with me differently, because mentally I'm not in the same space as I was yesterday.
I think it's interesting as well to look at, you know, why because we haven't even really touched on, there's so much to say, but also how how it presents and like why it happens in that way. Just getting briefly nerdy, which is exciting. So like in the brain, we've got the limbic system, which regulates our mood and emotion. And that's packed with hormone receptors for estrogen and progesterone. And so estrogen and progesterone are not just for mood regulation. Not just for reproduction. They also help with mood regulation as well. And when the hormones shift, the brain and nervous system feel it. But interestingly, the typical school of thought is that it's the progesterone pathway that is the problematic one, is that being sensitive to the rise of progesterone. But there's actually some evidence to show that it's also like the estrogen as well, the way that estrogen drops off in the second half of the cycle. And that's because estrogen helps support serotonin. When that drops off, then there's the dysregulation in, you know, our mood. So there is evidence to show that both estrogen and progesterone can cause that. And it depends like who you are and your own system, your body, your nervous system, and how that will present in you. But again, going back to that mapping is the best way that you can kind of identify when those things are and know, like all the things that you've said, yeah, you know, all your symptoms, when they're appearing, because they're all, when you can start to spot the patterns, then you can have be a bit more informed about, like, okay, yeah, this is regularly happening to me. This isn't just a one-off. This isn't just me. It's not my fault. This is, there's something going on here, because you can see it happen more consistently.
Yeah. So moving into strategies and support then, what strategies or coping mechanisms have you found particularly helpful?
Well, I mean, I'm biased with the cycle mapping because it gives you so much information. And the thing is, I have frameworks that I teach, ones that I can talk about, but I know from working with so many different people that there are slight nuances to that. Again, like having the full picture, and it's not just predicting when your period is going to be, but say the other four phases. And when we're trying to manage chronic conditions like this, it's helpful to know like what's happening in the other phases, because this is where we start to get into regulating that. So if you have a particularly busy, full-on first half of your cycle, I would say it's likely that the second half might be impacted by that, because you're already going to be running low on spoons and energy. Yeah. And so when we start mapping across the cycle, and not just to chart symptoms, but to chart everything, like how we feel, our mood, our focus, our motivation, we get a much bigger picture of that. And we can almost learn to pinpoint when things are going to happen, anticipate them, and then learn to work with that, to make accommodations for ourselves, say like, actually, I know I can't do that right now because this is going to impact a week later. And actually, I know it's not worth it. It's just not going to be worth the spoons. So I would definitely advocate for that as like a first step. And then once you kind of have an idea of that, you can layer on like diet and lifestyle changes, which I would always be my starting blocks, to make sure you have your baseline and your foundation settled before kind of like moving on to more like medical solutions.
Well, would you think the workplace could do better to support neurodivergent women who live with PMDD?
Oof, well, many, many things. I know that you and Charlie will speak about these a lot. Firstly, like reframing that it's just accommodations for people with PMDD, and actually recognizing that the accommodations that you might make for someone with PMDD will also support someone with PCOS, endometriosis, fibroids, perimenopause, chronic illness, mental health, because that's another thing we didn't cross, perimenopause, yeah. Neurodivergence and PMDD can all have very overlapping symptoms. It's kind of hard to pick that web apart sometimes. But in the workplace, it can go from, you know, let's go basics, blinds to go over like direct sunlight for light sensitivity, migraines, airflow, ergonomic chairs, comfortable seating, access to, you know, hot and cold drinks, just really fundamental stuff, going into having quiet options for quiet working spaces, or a well-being room, or just offering a meeting room for that so people can take themselves out of the busy, allowing headphones, just very simply. And if someone's wearing the headphones, maybe just email them instead, because they've got them on for a reason, all the way into sort of like how we communicate with each other, like in the workplace. And I know this is definitely moving into what you and Charlie talked to a lot, but if you're suffering with brain fog, fatigue, you know, dysregulated emotions, mm-hmm. it's a lot to be able to like pick out things through an email, just have a clear communication system, whether you're using the what, when, why method or like clear subject lines. You know, these things are just really, they're quite small. And of course we can move into having better policies around those. You take it as much as you want, but let's have those like basic things that just make a more easeful place. And those accommodations will, you know, when we do them for one group, we tend to then benefit the whole.
I also think as well, if you're in a role that's not, you know, you're not, you know, a nurse, you have to be working with people, machinery and things like that. You know, not having that mandatory that week that you need to be in for the 2 days and work, you know, there's a mandatory that you've got to be at work for 2 days that week. But actually, let me that week that I know that I'm going to be having those symptoms, let me work for home for the whole week.
Yeah.
Because I can manage it better when I'm at home.
Yeah. And, you know, I've done my own research. I've got a research project that I'm doing and currently as the research stands at the moment about, and this is just generally for, you know, period symptoms, about 70% of people said that they've lied to take time off for their period, saying that they had a cold or similar because of a fear of how that's going to be perceived, that they'll be penalized in some way, that they won't have the same opportunities for promotions, etc. So I think a more interesting question is, like, you know, why are people taking time off in your organization? Because I guarantee some of them are taking time off to manage their menstrual health and you don't know about it. And if you don't know about it, you're not collecting data. So you think it's not a problem, but it really, really is.
Yeah, no, I've got a prime example of that. You know, I was very open and honest with my team, especially the women, of, you know, let's talk about this, you know, your cycle. Some of them didn't suffer with PMS at all. And I had one particular young lady that I knew that really suffered quite painfully with her periods. And we'd have a discussion about how we would work that week with her. And I heard one line manager say, oh, she just needs to get on with it. It happens to all women. She just needs to get on with it.
Yeah.
And I was
literally, yeah.
Back. I mean, it's such a stereotypical thing that that needs to change. That attitude needs to change.
It does, but I think it's very, very indicative of like the time or the ways in which that person has also, you know, grown up, what they've been exposed to in their lives. You know, I get a lot of pushbacks on my posts. I talk about periods all the live long day.
And you are the period princess.
Yes. and I often get people push back, and it's often other women. And I, you know, I feel sad because they definitely grew up in a world where they did not have accommodations made for them. You know, there's a lot of internalized misogyny going on there, you know, that we have to push through. I literally saw on a post of someone else posting about menstrual health earlier, somebody had commented, oh, what are you going on about? Have we just gone soft? What? No, we haven't. These things have been happening forever. It's true. We shouldn't have to have dealt with them in the way that we have done up to this point. Now is the time to make accommodations for people so that they're not like experiencing feelings, you know, suicidal feelings, anger, rage, and being completely unsupported.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So coming back to kind of like the relationships and understanding, because obviously, you know, as a woman, I had a relationship with my team, which I understood because I was a woman. I understood, obviously, having somebody who suffered it myself. How can we have those relationships, one, to advocate for ourselves, but also advocate via healthcare as well? Because it does get dismissed quite a bit by male GPs.
It really does. And not just male GPs, but just because there is a lack of understanding, there's a lack of significant research and you know, training on these things. So it might not even be that male GPs don't know. It might be that also, you know, women GPs just haven't had that education or don't know what it is. And it's so difficult to get a diagnosis, not just for PMDD, but anything like endometriosis, PCOS, firstly, because of the gender pain gap, because it is dismissed as just, you know, bad PMS, or it's misdiagnosed as it could be like bipolar or personality disorders. It could be missed because it's assumed that it's to do with neurodivergence. So advocating for ourselves is so very important. And again, I come back to the cycle mapping. I'll say it till I'm blue in the face, but it gives you information. It arms you with the information that you need to take to your GP and say, look, it's happening regularly. There's a pattern. I can see that it's happening here. I want you to do something about it, because you know your body better than anyone else. And I think the external world massively goes to shut down our natural instincts. I call it our womb tuition, and asks us to look to the external world for validation the whole time. And so we need to go back to a place where we're trusting our own instincts.
Yeah.
And even better, we can validate ourselves with that information, with the mapping. Because then when you go to the GP, and please don't ever be afraid to take up space, in the GP office, even if you have to keep going back and back and back, because mm-hmm. you know your body, you know intrinsically what doesn't feel right for you, and you have a right to that care. So I went off on a whole big rant there.
Well, it is though. When I did research into it and I understood what it was, the first thing I did was reach out to my GP, and I was fortunate enough that there was a healthcare nurse there that did understand PMDD, and she's like, what can I do for you? And I was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't live like this anymore. And I was put on Sertraline, and actually, you know, medication is not for everybody, but actually Sertraline really helped me, and it supported my PMDD symptoms. And actually, I wouldn't go back now. I don't want to be that person for that week who I didn't recognize, because I'm quite a nice person. And in that week, I really wasn't. And I didn't like that side of me. So Sertraline has actually given me a better quality of life, because I now don't experience those symptoms anymore. And because I had got to a point where I said enough's enough, and I went to the GP and said, something needs to change. Something needs to change dramatically. And I would, for any woman out there who is experiencing that or feeling like that, I would say, if you've had enough, go to your GP, ask what can be done for you.
Yeah. And I'll just say again, there's several lines of action. Some people feel like they would like to, Some people I know like to take a more holistic approach, because it's a spectrum of severity. So there are lots of things that can be done with lifestyle changes, with diet changes, reducing inflammation in the body, working on nervous system regulation. There's lots of things that can be done there. In addition to that, going to the GP, they might prescribe like SSRIs, which are like Sertraline. So they're like antidepressants that deal with, that particularly help with serotonin production. There are other things that basically create, an injection that basically creates almost like a medical menopause, because it stops ovulation and can then stop the symptoms, which is sometimes also used as a bit of a diagnostic tool, because if that stopped the symptoms, then it kind of like diagnoses the problem. So yeah. there are several layers of protocols that you can take. If you're curious and you're wondering, this all resonates a lot with me, what's the first thing I could do? I say mapping. I've got a free mapper, by the way, for anyone that wants it. I can give you the link, Tony. There's also the PMDD project. They have quite a lot of resources on there. Have a look, find some research. As I said, there's lots of baseline things that you can do in terms of your nutrition, lifestyle, how you're working with your cycle, understanding that, because it definitely has an impact. And be informed, take up space at the doctors, ask the questions, and know what you have rights and access to. in the worst case, some people choose to have a hysterectomy or oophorectomy to rectify. So it's varying degrees.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got two more questions before we finish today. I've got one question, and my second question will be how people can find you if they need period advice, Samantha. But my first question would be, what message would you like to share to neurodivergent women listening who might be struggling with PMDD?
It's not just women's problems. You don't have to grin and bear that. Across the board, for anyone that experiences a period, period pain is common, but it's not normal. You know, if you have mood regulation to the point where it feels like you're a completely different human being, that's not normal. You have a right to a different life, to not experience that. It's not something that you have to grin and bear. I also think it's worth saying, if you've been a late diagnosed or highly masking neurodivergent person, it's likely that it's possible you might not have separated what you think are neurodivergent traits.
Yeah.
And what are PMDD traits?
Yeah.
So again, looking for key signs, does it begin sort of around 2 weeks to a week before your period? And do the symptoms drop off when your period starts? So that's going to start giving you some clues. And just to come back again to the fact that your body knows best. We have our own intuition, and don't doubt that. Don't let the external world like doubt your intuition. If something feels off, don't wait for validation from someone else. Like make the moves, start mapping, start tracking when these things are happening. Arm yourself with information and just know that you deserve the support and you deserve to take up space.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for taking the time to come and talk to us today. I can see that Charlie's been working in the background, and actually she's put on where to contact you, Samantha.
Oh, amazing. Thank you, Charlie.
She's put your LinkedIn and she's put your website. So you no need to repeat it. Well done, Charlie. And just for me, as a closing thought, is you're not alone.
Mm.
It can be very lonely when you think that it's only happening to you. And it can be very hard hitting when you think that you're disrupting. That it's so easy to self-blame. When you've had that week, the self-blame can be really can be hard, because the criticism of yourself of, why did I say that? Why have I reacted like that? Why am I caused this problem within my household because of the way I've reacted? And that self-blame can be really hard. And yes, absolutely, validate your feelings. Feelings are validated, emotions are validated, but also be kind to yourself. It will be my lasting message to anyone listening to this. Be kind to yourself, because it's not always within your control. But how you react afterwards. So I became very, I knew that I, afterwards, when I understood what happened, I would go back and apologize for things they may have done, which was out of my control. I had control of how I reacted afterwards, but I had no control with how I reacted within. So be kind to yourself is my message.
Yeah, 100%.
Brilliant. Well, thank you all for listening. You can share this with anybody that you feel would benefit from this conversation. If it's something that you want to hear again or more of, please let us know. Charlie's going to put our email address into the chat, I'm hoping, for email us if there's any particular topics that you want to see shared on our podcast, anything else that you particularly want to see us talk about. And you can also view this on mine and Charlie's YouTube, and also come back to the recordings on LinkedIn as well. And we also have, this will be live on Spotify next week for anybody who just wants to listen to the podcast as well. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen today. Samantha, again, thank you so much for coming along and talking with us.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.